Welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe? Hello? Did I lose you?
Who's on the line? Hello? Who is this?
We're doing a podcast.
What? We just did one 3 days ago.
Yeah, but you're going to be out of town all week.
Oh.
Or all weekend.
At some point. Am I breaking kayfabe again?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, where were we at? I missed the opening.
Should we start again? How is Joe? Fine. You want to start again?
Nah, what the heck.
No, I'll start again.
Fine.
Hold on. I'll start again. You ready?
I am doing well.
Are you
the
ready?
The swelling has gone down. What? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Start again. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Solitaire Rose Radio brings to you its tag team champions of the world. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard, and he's the D-O-double-G, Joe Crazy Writer.
And hey, they're going down
with that. We got two words for you. Suck it.
Oh, I was going to say thanks for listening, but that works.
Never give me a chance to do it again.
Hey, you know, and we're all about wrestling now. I was talking off camera. The local affiliates are all up in arms. Rey Mysterio from WWE was spotted at the Vikings game. Kurt Angle was on the local Jason show, which you can go to the YouTubes and watch if you want, even if you don't want to watch the whole show. It's always funny, too, because Jason is not a sports guy. You know, he does it, you know, his co-host Kendall is all over the sports and she's trying to teach him football. She comes out of the promo truck. She's got the women's champion belt and she's doing it. She's raising it up. Whoa, you know, doing the pump fist. It's a lot of fun. And, I don't know if you saw it, Corey, they're doing a best of SmackDown this Friday on the Fox affiliate. But I guess October 4th is the big day where it goes live. And that's kind of a early geeking because I've been pretty much out of pro wrestling for a while because I don't have cable. I got WWE Network, but I got Netflix, I got Hulu, I got Prime, I got Marvel Unlimited, I got all sorts of things. I just don't, you know, it never occurs to me to watch it. But if it's on TV and I can get to it regularly, and plus, are they doing all of Friday? Is it going to be a two-hour extravaganza?
Yes. What's going on? Let me tell you what's happening this week. Today, Monday, when this episode drops, the rebranding of Raw. Raw will get a new set. They will be preparing for the draft. And this time, the two brands will be split without people going show to show because they're, you know, changing networks. So Raw going to be the kickoff for it. Then Wednesday, WWE NXT, which has been on for the last 2 weeks, will begin 2 hours on Wednesday. They have been only doing 1 hour because this thing was put on USA so fast that they didn't even wait for the show Suits to end. They just basically said, all right, we're going to put on the first hour of NXT, and then once Suits is over, and that's this week, it's going to be 2 hours. Also on Wednesday, All Elite Wrestling, Dynamite, a two-hour show on TNT begins, and I'll be covering it for PW Insider. I'll be doing the live play-by-play recap and an audio recap afterward. Then on Friday, SmackDown moves to Fox, and Fox has been pouring tons of promotion into this because the Fox network is kind of going to be rebranding over the next few years. Because they sold Fox Entertainment to Disney, they don't have their own studio anymore to feed them hits, so they are going to be moving more and more towards sports. That's why they... bought the Thursday night football. It's why they've got WWE on Friday nights for 2 hours. They're talking about getting more sports to put on the broadcast network. So this is a big week for wrestling. And, of course, we don't talk wrestling, do we?
Never.
We just talk about the funny books.
We do.
Now, this they're calling this upcoming Wednesday the Wednesday Night Wars.
Interesting.
Because it's this new company, All Elite, versus NXT. NXT's first episode out of the gate got 1.2 million viewers, so we're going to see what All Elite gets. And it's company versus company. And last time we had a, well, last time we had a Monday Night War was TNA Impact versus Raw, and we all know how that ended.
Yeah.
But in the 90s, you know, we had WWE versus actually it was WWF versus WCW. Now, were you with us for the first Nitro at the Mall of America?
Nope. I let other people go, and I stayed home. Well, I stayed at the shop, actually.
They did the first Nitro at the Mall of America in the Rotunda. And I got a rousing chant going. We were up on the fourth floor, and we got a rousing chant going of Hogan sucks when Hogan came out to do his promo.
He's supposed to be a good guy.
Yeah, that was back before he switched over to the NWA. So I like to personally take credit for Hogan turning heel.
Yep.
We even ate at Pasta Mania. Pasta Mania had opened that day. And, was that crappy pasta. Because what it was fast food pasta. So what they had like six different kinds of pasta and six different kinds of sauces. But they would cook the pasta and then they'd leave it in the water until people ordered it. So that by the time you got some, it was utterly waterlogged. I remember, because here's the pasta and they'd put some sauce on it. And you'd just see this puddle of water grow around the pasta as you took the plate back to where you were going to eat. Good thing comics don't have anything like the Monday Night Wars.
No pasta there.
Incredible Hulk pasta. There was Spider-Man pasta though.
Yeah.
In a can.
Yeah, the better. Well, I think they had it in boxes too, because I remember buying it for the girls. But the problem was is it was really thick, and if you didn't cook it right, it.
I just remember
also mush
the canned stuff, and it was pretty bad. I keep throwing you the softball show. It's not like comic companies ever fought against each other.
Never. They were always either in the. It was only in softball.
I do remember those. Marvel used to make a big deal of it in the Marvel bullpen bulletins. And DC never mentioned it.
Now they'll never mention it again.
How can I get you to help me lead into them?
You probably can't. So just what do you want to talk about?
Marvel versus DC.
Never last.
No, we not talked this, about it. In not the past, series right? Marvel versus DC.
No, that did not hold up.
Company crossovers.
Oh yeah.
I had just started reading comics in 75, so 70 they were already talking about Superman versus Spider-Man. And that was already a big deal, and they treated it like this could never, ever happen. And then we got some crossovers until Jim Shooter pissed all over Avengers versus JLA. And that was the end of that until he was gone. Joe, do you remember that big controversy? Where Gary Conway and Roy Thomas were plotting Avengers JLA. It was after Avengers X-Men. Not Avengers X-Men. Teen Titans X-Men. And that had come out and sold a kajillion copies. So the next one was going to be Avengers JLA, written by Roy Thomas and Gary Conway, and drawn by George Perez. And sadly, it was just going to be a one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they started hyping it. And then Marvel Age, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, had an article. Avengers JLA, the dream has died. Where Jim Shooter gave all the reasons why DC was terrible people who had ruined this story and wouldn't even listen to Marvel's suggestions. And then DC, in Dick Giordano's meanwhile, printed all the memos that they'd gotten from Shooter to say, no, that's not really what happened. Here are the actual memos that we got from Jim Shooter. And the one I remember most is, you need to make these corrections by thus and such date. And Giordano said he sent this 2 weeks after the deadline he put in the memo. Now, did you follow any of that in the 80s, or did you just not?
I did, because I was hyped up for it. And, kind of bummed that it never came.
Then we started to get crossovers again in the 90s. So I thought what we could do would be to talk about our five favorite DC/Marvel crossovers. Because there were a bunch of them out there. There are four trade paperbacks. They're out of print now, but you can still get them on the eBays and the Amazons and in comic shops, called Crossover Classics. And they reprint all of the crossovers except for Avengers JLA, which I think was only available in that absolute version. They never did do a regular hardcover trade paperback, did they?
No, they did.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, I actually bought one from one of the guys used to, I don't know where he bought it, but I got it sitting on my shelf. So that way I don't have to pull out the absolute. And, it's in paperback format. And the problem is when you get to the super spread pages, you can't, unless you want to break your paperback in two so you can look at the art, it's hard to look at it that way. But they did come out with one.
While Joe is out hunting the elusive trade paperback, I will be sitting here in the blind, watching, drinking a nice tall glass of Maker's Mark bourbon.
I will let me fire up the Kratron 3000. Oh, forget it, it's dead. To the 4000! JLA Avengers. Dun-dun-dun. Nope, they just put the... So, 1 and 3 were published by Marvel. So, I have to go to Avengers JLA?
Yep.
And let's see. They published 2 and 4. But they're only giving credit to Marvel for the big book. So, I'll find it eventually and I'll bring it up next time we get together in this here podcast. I'm just curious who published it.
Well, I know that DC did the big deluxe version because that was in
their absolute.
That's their absolute format. I imagine if they got the absolute format, Marvel got the other. I got the absolute not just because it was, George Perez art on the way it should be, as big as humanly possible, but it also had a compendium which had all of the art from the original Avengers JLA.
Yeah.
Which was owned by, does Joe know?
Who Rob owned Liefeld all of, had it for a while.
Yep, Rob Liefeld owned all of that art. And actually, right before this book went out, he was on tour with it. If he went to a convention, he would set up the art so people could look at it at the convention he was at.
Do you have $105?
For what?
You can get the paperback online.
Oh, I don't need the paperback. I got the nice big one.
I know. I'm just amazed I have the paperback and it's worth that much. I better find it.
I'm just amazed that Marvel and DC let it go out of print.
Well, they probably were fighting over who who actually got the publishing rights to it. My guess would be Marvel if DC did the Absolute. So let me I'll look this stuff up later. I don't see any Absolutes online.
Well, probably not. If I remember right, that thing was sold out before it hit comic shops.
Well, I remember because that was one of the – I had ordered the – well, there's one for $200. I had ordered it through Christie before her store went under, but I made the mistake of ordering the signed edition.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I did get it, and I don't know if Nick got it through the source or if he was picking up Christie's orders and – when she disappeared, he just incorporated them into the source. I don't know what happened there. But I did actually get a signed one. And it was cool because it was signed by everybody. And eventually I just ended up selling it because I got a regular edition. And I'm, like you said, I'm just real happy with it. Because what's fun about it is not so much the story, which was a lot of fun, but the annotated stuff that Kurt Busiek wrote. Because then he puts every single character, especially in that wacky fourth issue. I'll start off the list. We'll do the round robin. And, I might need some help with this one, Corey, because the first thing that came to mind when I was thinking the top five, it was close. I thought of the Amalgam comics, but that I think would be its own podcast because those are pretty, you know, they had that Marvel versus DC, DC versus Marvel, where you actually got to phone in and decide who won the fights. And I don't know how accurate it would be because I know of certain editors who said, oh, yeah, there is no way the Hulk's beating Superman. Don't even worry. Not happening. However, I decided I'm going to go, you know me, I like to shove in as much as I can. Corey, I know of two John Byrne DC Marvel crossovers. Darkseid vs. Galactus, The Hunger, which we've talked about in the past. And if I believe the story was, Byrne came up to DC and said, hey, I've got this. I just drew this here. Do what you want with it. And they published it as a one-shot, which was kind of cool. The other one I remember is Batman Captain America, again, when DC was publishing it. And he took Batman and Captain America and had him in the 40s during the Golden Age. So you had the Golden Age Batman with the, you know, not the oval, but just the bat symbol and cap. And, you know, me, I love John Byrne's art, and he actually had a good take for the characters, the way they were in the 40s. And then, of course, the Darkseid Galactus. I mean, it was so awesome anyways, because both these characters were created by Jack Kirby. And to have
Batman was not created by Jack Kirby.
Darkseid Galactus.
Okay, you were mixing them up.
I switched.
Okay.
Because those are the only two that I remember. The question is, are there any other John Byrne ones that he did?
Not that I can remember.
I don't think there are. But those are the two that I like. They're not terribly expensive, so you should be able to go to your friendly neighborhood comic store if they have them and find them, or go on the eBays and do the same thing. So for me, the number five spot is the John Byrne ones, Batman Captain America and Darkseid Galactus The Hunger. Corey?
First one I have is probably the first crossover, and it was utterly unofficial. It is the Rutland Halloween Parade, which showed up in Avengers 83, Batman 237. Let's see, next was Amazing Adventures number 16, Justice League 103. And Thor 207. And what it was, this was a parade in Rutland, Vermont, where people would cosplay. before it was called cosplay. They would dress up for the Halloween parade as superheroes. And the person who ran the parade was a comic book fan, and he would invite comic creators. So they figured, a lot of the younger creators went and figured out that this would be a cool way to kind of do unofficial crossovers that the editors wouldn't quite know about. So in the first one, it was just the parade was in those two books, and they would show normal people like in a almost a Superman costume, or almost a Captain America costume, or almost a Batman costume. But in the fall of 1972, Steve Englehart, Gary Conway, and Len Wein put together a story where all three of the, this is the Amazing Adventures, Justice League 103, and Thor 207. Each comic featured Englehart, Conway, and Len Wein interacting with Marvel and DC villains and heroes. So beginning in Amazing Adventures number 16, the Beast hitches a ride with Steve Englehart, who's driving Len Wein and Gary Conway to Rutland. The story terminates when Juggernaut attempts to steal Englehart's car. Then, in Justice League 103, Batman and the other Justice League members wind up leading the parade to capture Felix Faust, who does steal Englehart's car, but is pulled over by the police. And then in Thor 207, the three comics creators again visit the creator, and during which Englehart's car is stolen by Felix Faust off stage. So they come back, and Steve Englehart's like, "Where's my car? Who stole my car?" I like this one because it was just comic back in the 70s, there was this feeling of these young comic fans who had come into comics just doing stuff for fun. Just how can we make these comics fun? How can we make this more interesting for us and still have good stories? And it was back when the idea of DC and Marvel crossing over would never, ever happen. Well, it kind of happened by having the comic creators involved. So that is my number five story. Joe, what's your number four?
For number four, I have Superman and Spider-Man. This was published in July 1981. Not the original one from 1976, but this was, I believe, the second one they did. So you're talking they went from 76 all the way to 1981. Before they did a another crossover.
Was it? I thought Batman Hulk was 79.
No, I believe that was after.
Oh, but, okay.
I can look it up here because I do have the Kraytron 4000 still fired up. So, and that one was what? Batman
versus Hulk. And Batman beat the Hulk, and I was just mad about that.
Yeah, that one was not Batman Incredible Hulk.
Beautiful to look at, though. It was drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Oh, yeah. It was beautiful to look at.
Story was so-so, but yeah. No, that was 81. So they were done the same year. My recollection was it was Superman, Spider-Man, and then Batman, Hulk. Because that was in the fall. And what I loved about the Superman Spider-Man is, let's see, Jim Shooter wrote it, Marv Wolfman, and John Buscema did the penciling. A lot of inkers along with them. And this one was probably as close as you could get to the Marvel style. There's a definite difference in feel, like Corey said, between this one and the Batman one. And it's just the way, because this one was all Marvel. Smaller panels, a lot more word balloons, little more interplay. Hulk makes an appearance in it. Dr. Doom, Wonder Woman. So it feels like these guys are almost in the same universe together. They're not shoehorned in. They're not accidentally running into each other. And it came out, of course, in the Treasury size edition, which was just amazing. And it's one of my faves. I still have it, even though it's kind of beat up. And it's just a fun read to take out and do it. It makes you kind of wish that Money on the Table, just make an actual comic, just its own Elseworld What If. That's just okay. All the characters exist in the same universe. You know, they always talked about in these where, oh yeah, these happen. We just can't refer to Superman's story and Spider-Man and vice versa. But to me, this is like, what do we call this? Earth
dollar sign.
Four, yeah, okay, that's good. Earth dollar sign.
I remember at the time, it's all these stories take place on Earth dollar sign.
Yeah. So for me, this one was fun. It was closer to the comics I was reading in 81 because it was I wasn't quite into DC yet. I really stuck with Marvel for the longest time. Now, trying to find one of these in mint shape would be kind of tough. However, there were a couple of reprints. There was a Warner mass market paperback that came out, and then they did in 95, they did a comic book size one where they put a gold border around the image. And you can usually pick that up for like $12. So if you do want to try to find it and read it, it's out there, or just, you know, drop some bucks and get the big one, enjoy the big art. So for me, that's my number four. Corey?
I actually remember buying that one as the trade paperback because I couldn't find the Treasury edition anywhere.
Oh, I was buying it
paperback, the paperback.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this John Buscema art is really small.
Yeah, it almost, you just kind of confirmed you almost need to see it in the bigger size. And I know I got mine. I might have been using Advanced Comics in 81. I don't think Pat and I started buying stuff together in 83. So I probably was just, I wandered into my comic store and found it because it had a cover price of $250. So for me, that was always a big one. I enjoyed that one thoroughly.
The next one that I deeply, deeply fell in love with is X-Men Teen Titans. This was an event. This was huge. This was we had Superman, Spider-Man, which was huge. And then Batman, Hulk was kind of okay. Yeah. And Superman, Spider-Man, well, you really liked it. It was just kind of okay. But X-Men Teen Titans was Chris Claremont's going to do it. Oh, man. Walt Simonson's going to draw it. Oh, man. And the bad guys are Darkseid and Phoenix. Holy shit! I remember the weekend that this thing came out. I drove to my... This was back when comics came out on a Friday. I drove to the comic shop, even though I'd been there the week before, to pick up my copy. And they had this monster stack. I mean, you know, they didn't just have it on the shelf. They also had a big stack on a table. And when I went back to the comic shop in 2 or 3 weeks, they were gone. And I was like, they sold out? And he's like, yeah, they were gone in a week. Then they hit newsstands. And I remember there was this video arcade / gaming store near me that if I didn't have to work on a Saturday because it was rainy or something, I'd just hang out at. You know, play video games, talk Dungeons and Dragons and comics. Well, it was right after X-Men Teen Titans came out. I mean, if we would have been podcasting back then, that podcast was a 7-hour podcast. Teen Titans was red hot. It had started with Wolfman and Perez, had been going for about 3 years. It was DC's hottest selling book. It was bringing in Marvel fans. And the X-Men, this was like less than 2 years after the death of Phoenix. They had not brought Dark Phoenix back before. So we were all, oh, they can't do that. They can't do that, can they? Can they? Can they do that? you could go back and read it now and it's still a great story. And you could go back and read it now and you could see that Claremont had a good grasp on the Teen Titans, which we were really surprised by. But Walt Simonson's art made this thing special. This was right before he took over Thor. And he made this, you know, I it was printed regular comic size. To this day, I wish someone would print it as Treasury Edition, because this was a story that was drawn to be a Treasury Edition. I could still close my eyes right now and see the two-page spread. Who summons Dark Phoenix? I, Darkseid. Oh. This was a book where they built it up for a year and it paid it off. It was that good. And that was the last Marvel DC crossover for almost a decade, too. So, whew, that was a big deal. Joe?
For me, I'm going back for my number three to the 1976 Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man, the Battle of the Century. I've talked about this before. My 12-year-old self seeing this, I don't know where. It could be in Comic Buyer's Guide. It could have been in a magazine. It had to have been other than in the comic store, because I looked high and low for it. It's not like now where you could go and you could get an okay one right about now for about $45 on the eBays. Same thing with the Superman and Spider-Man I talked about. So they're a little more pricey. But the idea that these two would meet and fight, holy cow. You couldn't. I mean, the only thing close to that in terms of blowing my little brand new comic book brain was What If number one. What if Spider-Man had joined the Fantastic Four? So this was the white whale. This was the holy grail for me to find. And when I did, oh, did it deliver. It was fantastic. It's written by Gary Conway, penciled by Ross Andrew, Neil Adams. He did a lot of the Superman figuring, and John Romita Sr., who did some of the Marvel faces. So he did most
of the Spider-Man figures.
And all I can say is, if you've never read this, it is a joy to behold. It's in a huge format. The art just sings to you. The story is brilliant, and they do cover the fact that there's no way Spider-Man's going to be able to beat up Superman. And again, for my 12-year-old self, the villains were Doc Octopus, and of course Lex Luthor was in there. And what got to me, and I don't know if I'm spoiling a 45-year-old book. I don't even want to do the math. I'm 35. No, never mind. You know, there were two things. First of all, Doc Octopus helps, because one of the big things is Luthor wants to destroy the Earth and go to whatever planet. And of course, the continuity driven me thinks, wait a minute, Luthor has never destroyed the Earth before because he has a sister living somewhere there. There was actually a Superman story where he stopped it from being destroyed because of that. So I thought, well, they're kind of ignoring that one. But and the question is if it's canon or not. Well, you know, there's a couple scenes there. What if number one, the same one I was just blabbing about, there's a little picture of Spider-Man about to receive a punch from somebody wearing blue sleeves. And in Avenger Forever number six, there's a scene in number eight of Doc Ock carrying Lex Luthor. And even Mosaic number four in 2017, Spider-Man has a memory unleashing a volley of punches against a blue-clad gentleman. So, you know, take this as continuity driven or not, but it was, I think I'm babbling here, but it was such a mind blow to actually get a hold of this. I've gotten smaller versions of it, but I do have one downstairs, not my original one, but it, the sad thing is a lot of these old square bound treasuries, the glue binding sucked. And so I have a very nice cover and the insides, but they're not connected. And I'm like, who cares? I have it. I can read it when I want. We've seen DC, Marvel liberally grab things out of our podcast and just take it. Guys, take this one and shoot out an absolute Marvel versus DC crossover with the ones we're talking about, because I would pay through the nose to get something like, or an omnibus. We love omnibuses. Corey and I are Omni-Men. We're Omni-Men.
Omni-Men.
So this one to me is.
Wait, am I the cleaner or the Omni-Man?
Well, we're Omni-Men. That's the name of the team.
Oh, okay.
You're the cleaner and I'm the crazed one. Oh, and we don't talk about our origin because that is the incident.
It's no longer part of continuity since Superboy punched a wall.
But it was in Avengers Forever, so it could be. So, anyways, that was my number three. And for as much babbling as you'd think, it could have been higher. So what could be my top two? Well, let's first find out what Corey's got. Corey, what's your number three?
Well, I wanted to mention something about Superman, Spider-Man. This thing, they sold it mail order in both companies. And I can still, you know how I could see that page in X-Men Teen Titans? The page that I remember most in Superman versus Spider-Man is Spider-Man just wailing away on Superman's stomach. And then eventually, I think I broke my hands.
Yeah, yeah. This is after the whatever it was that juiced Spider-Man up wore off. And the cover is iconic because how many people have paid homage or just outright ripped it off? You know, Superman flying up and Spider-Man just with his fist cocked. And they are, I believe, on top of the Empire State Building.
Yep.
So.
And Gary Conway had just finished his run on Spider-Man. Ross Andrew was still working on Spider-Man.
Mm.
And they, I think Gary Conway was actually writing Superman at the time. And Ross Andrew, who, of course, drew all sorts of DC stuff in the 50s and 60s. So that's why they settled on those artists.
And you know, I know what I'm going to be doing tonight. I'm going to dig these suckers. I know where my treasury editions are, unlike most things in my comic collection. So I think I'm going to bring these babies out and read them.
Number three is Avengers JLA. Yes, the George Perez, Kurt Busiek. This may be the best constructed story, the best drawn story, but this is our favorites. And while this is the best, it's not my favorite, because favorite comes from the heart. But still, this is an amazing, amazing book. And George Perez actually says that I think it was the cover of either 3 or 4, he had to draw twice as big as a regular comic cover, because there were so many figures. And one of the reasons why he didn't draw as much after this is because the detail he put into it actually caused eye problems.
It would be 3, because 4 was Superman with Thor's hammer and Cap's shield.
Then it's number 3. That's the one he said.
I'm looking at it right here.
Started his eye problems, which still, this is George Perez's legacy. This is the book for the rest of comic fandom. When you want to say, why was George Perez the greatest superhero artist from the 70s to whenever he retired, you're going to point at this. He was at his peak. The inking was just beautiful because he was inking himself. And Kurt Busiek, there's nobody better. There's nobody who knows the history and the lore of the characters, the story. It was kind of your standard JLA story, except he started throwing in all these wonderful Marvel twists, because the standard JLA story is, all right, this thing has been split into 7 pieces, and we have to go and gather the 7 pieces and bring them all together. But that was just the start. From there, it really just kind of took off. And the best thing about it was he really got into the differences between Marvel and DC. He got into the philosophical differences of the companies. Where Superman, you know, yes, it was, you know, it got heightened by the villains as time went on. But Superman looked at how the Marvel characters were thought of in their universe, you know, hunted by the police, and all, many of them are former outlaws, and there have been times when they've been wanted by the government, and he's disgusted by it. Meanwhile, in the DC universe, Captain America sees all these statues and museums, and he's disgusted. They put themselves up on a pedestal. They allow themselves to be worshipped. And it is the difference. The Marvel characters are more complex with feats of feet of clay. The DC characters are legends. They're icons. It's different storytelling styles. And not just, okay, let's figure out a way to get the heroes to fight each other. But he got into the differences between what makes each character who they are. Add that to the best superhero art ever. And this is an amazing, amazing book. The fact that the trade paperbacks sell them for $100, I imagine if Marvel and DC shook hands and put it out, it would again sell, you know, 50 to 100,000 copies within his first 2-3 months. Joe?
Well, now I'm going to read Tread One, because my number two is the aforementioned Marvel and DC Presents The Uncanny X-Men and the New Teen Titans. Same thing in 1982 when it came out. It was phenomenal. Corey did a great job, because X-Men and Teen Titans were at the peak. If you weren't reading them, you just weren't a comic fan, because you just didn't quite figure out what's going on. I love the little bits of characterization in here, the little pieces of continuity stuff, because, you know, when the X-Men and the Teen Titans realize what they're up against, they're thinking, well, we should probably give a call to the Avengers or the JLA. Just a little nod that says, yeah, this could be going on in our universe, even though, you know, we know it's not really, because it's, you know, universe dollar sign. Yeah. But, you know, it acknowledges the past that Corey, you remember, how did Starfire learn a new language?
By kissing someone.
And I forget why. I think Kitty was kind of flirting with Beast Boy. I think it was Beast Boy then, or was he Changeling? I forget. And Colossus was a little angry, and he kind of cursed himself out in Russian, and Starfire's like, oh, look, a new language, and gives him a big kiss on the lips, to which Nightcrawler's looking at like, sprechen Sie Deutsch, Fräulein? And of course, then Kitty's like, oh, who's that hussy think she is? The finale, when Dark Phoenix realizes who it was that's turned her, not only disturbed her peace, but when she goes at Darkseid, Darkseid just stands there, hand behind his back, looking at her. And I'm like, that is so stoic. His doom is coming at him, and he's just standing there. And yeah, granted, when he's being carried away in the clutches of the Phoenix, he's kind of maybe a little more emoting a little bit more. And my take of Simonson's art is that he's more angry than like panicky, but just a phenomenal one. I would love to see this in a bigger format. Fortunately, this one is not tough to find. I'm on atomicavenue.com. You can get it for under $5. So if you've never read this one, you're in for a treat, because I was at a con a couple weekends ago, and I found them sitting in the bin at $5, and I'm tempted to pick one up, but I know I've got about four of them in my collection. They're just not where I want in order to read them. So yeah, this one was a lot of fun. It was in comic book format. It's easy to store. That's probably why it's not as expensive, because it didn't fall apart as much. That's it for my number two. I'm going to look up that Batman Hulk one just to see what that's going for. But Corey, while I'm doing that, tell the folks about your number two.
My number two is one that you mentioned, and that's the Captain America Batman story by Byrne. And by this time, it was around this time that Byrne was getting lazy with his work. And this was not lazy. And to me, this showed what Byrne should be doing, because he wanted it set in the 40s because he didn't like the new current version of Batman. He wasn't real happy about the current version of Captain America. He wanted the ones that he liked. So he set it in the past. It was the Batman of the 40s who smiled, called people chum, wasn't the grim detective of the night, but was kind of a happy Zorro-like adventurer. Captain America was the, you know, all-American hero. None of the angst or the worry about the fact that he'd been frozen and missed out on years. Nope, this is the all-American patriotic guy, and they teamed up with Red Skull and Joker were the bad guys, leading to that wonderful scene where when the Joker figures out the Red Skull's a Nazi, he's like, look, I may be a clown, I may be a criminal, but I'm no Nazi. It was just a fun comic book story. And there wasn't a lot of angst. There wasn't a lot of grim and gritty. And this was at the time when comics were really pushing the dark, grim and gritty sort of thing. And Byrne kind of wanted to do an antidote to that. This one, it was just fun. It was just 48 pages of fun. And you could tell that Byrne was into it because he really put a lot of detail into his art, which was something he had already started kind of fading back on by, I think it was 94 when this came out. So this is one, you know, I enjoy all of the company crossovers, but this is the one that just gives me a big smile when I read it. Joe, what's your number two? Number two.
No, we're on number one.
Number one.
I know. Gosh. Can you believe it? We've been having so much fun delving into the past. My number one is something we've been blathering out. We started talking about it. You talked about it. Now I'm going to talk more about it. The JLA Avengers. I do have to admit, when it first came out, the art was beautiful, but people were kind of underwhelmed with the story. I think a lot of people were, it was almost like, how could this possibly live up to the hype? And I got to admit, I was one of them. But when I step back over time, I realize it. Kurt Busiek wrote just an outstanding story. He put so much into it. When the universes break down and everybody's going into alternate universes, almost everybody, I think everybody who was ever in JLA or Avengers is in there somewhere. And it's just a lot of fun. I've got the absolute version of it. We didn't really talk much about how this came to be. Corey, do you remember who was supposed to write this originally?
Do you mean the original version?
No, the one we know and love, the JLA Avengers.
I did not know that somebody else was supposed to do it. Mark Waid would have done a good job.
And he was tapped to do it, but he was unavailable due to a commitment with CrossGen.
Oh, that's right. He was... And George Perez was actually working for CrossGen at the time. He had it put into his contract that if this ever came to be, he could do it. And Marvel and DC agreed, and they released him from his contract to do this book.
Yeah, and he, I remember the CrossGen publisher, you know, making hay with it because he's like, hey, this is way cool. We're going to let him do it. Not to get too far into CrossGen, but they always were more sensitive to the comic book market. I remember one of the owners of Hot Comics actually going to a CrossGen seminar before they published to say, hey, what can we do as a publisher to make it a success? And obviously it failed. But, it, you know, nevertheless, they did try. I'm not going to say much about the story other than Bruce Timm expressed interest in making an animated film on the comics. There is so much. It's such a busy miniseries. You know, yeah, Corey and I brag because we have the absolutes, but you can go get the original four-issue run fairly cheap, fairly inexpensive, because they made billions of them. And to me, that was probably – I don't think Marvel and DC have done anything since.
No, they have not. It was the last thing they did is – well, other than the reprints, the those crossover classic reprint books.
Yeah. And I will mention, too, that some of these crossovers, not the JLA Avengers, but the earlier ones we were talking about, there are ones available where they reprinted them in a comic book size, and they have gold cover reprints. Expensive as all hell. It's, you could get, right now on eBay, you could get a, it's $30 is the cheapest one, that Batman versus Hulk one. And you can go, I'm trying to find an actual one. There's... No, I guess I'll take that back. The I can't find an actual. Oh, there's a treasure edition, $55 if you want to buy it. So those early ones were very expensive. The later ones, and they, you know, it's really too bad because of all the ones we've talked about. I mean, if you could go out and if you could find the original Superman, Spider-Man, Superman. And even the Batman Hulk, they're fun to read. They're just so much fun. Everything else we've talked about, you can find in somewhere for them a lot cheaper. So you don't have to spend mega bucks to find it. But for me, JLA Avengers over time is still number one. And it goes past the joy I had reading Uncanny X-Men, Teen Titans, the golden age wonder of my 12-year-old self, finding the Superman, Spider-Man, or even the second ones, or that was, no, that was Superman versus Spider-Man versus the next one, which was Superman and Spider-Man. See, very important, your prepositions. No, those are conjunctions. Yes, never mind. I'm going to go figure out my grammar while we listen. Corey, what is your number one?
Conjunction, junction, what's your function? Cooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Wait 10 seconds, otherwise we're going to get sued.
I suppose. My number one is actually a spinoff of a crossover that wasn't really all that good.
Uh-oh.
I loved Amalgam. Loved, 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 loved Amalgam. Amalgam was a spinoff of Marvel versus DC. Marvel DC was this big thing that they did in 96 after the sales had collapsed to try to bring people back. They pushed that this was Marvel versus DC and you decide the winners. So they had a number of stories where people decided the winners. They got on, I remember at the time, they got on CNN a few times to push this thing. And the story was just kind of mediocre.
And it does not hold up well.
No, not at all.
Although the best part about it for me is when Superboy and Spider-Man meet to fight. And Superboy says, I may be just a clone of Superman, but I'm more than a match for you. And Spider-Man goes, clone? And looks shaken. And do you remember why, Corey?
Yeah, because it was Ben Reilly.
Yeah, he was Spider-Man at the time. So
and
again,
wasn't Superman in one of his stupid get-ups as well?
I would have to look because I don't know if I actually own a copy of Marvel.
I remember that most of the characters were messed up and not their original selves. But Amalgam, at the end of issue 3, the two universes were combined. And we got 12 books where the characters were slammed together, such as Spider-Boy and the Legion of Guardians or something like that. Lobo the Duck.
The Doctor big one Strange that people Fate. Really went, Doctor Strange Fate, I love. And I don't know if that's because he shows up later as the return to Amalgam, but he is such a bastard of a character. And, of course, you know, we're original rat bastards. Again, Professor Xavier, Doctor Strange put together with Dr. Fate's helmet and Doctor Strange's power. If I ran the industry, that would be the number one thing I would do for a major crossover event. Because the last we saw of the Amalgam Universe, it was put in some type of orb. Always an orb, never a cube. And that's where the Amalgam lives today. And if I was writing Doctor Strange or Doctor Fate or whoever, I'd always have that orb. You know, it just, they switch universes to keep it safe. But they exist. I'd have them escape, and I would bring those characters back in a three-way. Oh, yeah. Because you have them. What do I know? I want to bring back Ultraverse. But that character stuck with me. I remember the Legends of Darkclaw was very expensive because that was Wolverine Batman, I think.
Yep.
And I'm looking at the second one.
The second crossover was just as good.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. had some heat on it. There were certain ones that people went crazy over. But
Challengers of the Fantastic was one I enjoyed.
Oh, it was a blast. I would not advise going for the collected edition because they're out of print and expensive. But I think you could probably pick up, go to Wikipedia, get your list. And I believe you could probably pick up a run of this stuff fairly inexpensive.
I loved this idea. I loved both runs of it. It was a good idea that spun out of a bad story. And every so often, I have the trade paperbacks. Every so often, I just go back and read them again. You don't really need to have read the crossover because they, other than Doctor Strange Fate, they didn't really tie into it. And they treated it like, well, these characters have been around since the 60s.
Yeah, and oftentimes the issue was like that, like to be continued or what happened previously. Heck, they even had a trading card set in 96 if you're so inclined to just want the characters and, you know, read the backs of it and see what they were doing.
So that's my favorite. You know who else is my favorite, Joe?
How about the guy who's right now, as we're talking, although by the time the podcast drops, it's over, selling an entire 170 lot of Amalgam comics starting at 99 cents with free shipping.
Ooh, I know. He's really good, but he's not as good as these guys, our sponsors. That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You could get them weekly. You could get them bi-weekly. You could get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. Now, for those of you who don't like that Joe pulls me off target all the time,
drags me
off onto rabbit trails.
Up in Maple Grove, Target is starting to set up the Disney store. And they've actually dropped some of the Star Wars figures up there. So for you guys up there that are waiting, it's going to be set up. So
stuff like that. You think you could do better? Well, Joe's going to be out during the month of December.
Yeah, so I'm
here. Be a guest host.
As Joe preps for Hip Watch 2 Electric Boogaloo, I am looking for co-hosts through the month of December. Now, the other thing that we did last year that I really enjoyed, because December can be a very busy month, is we recorded most of our fill-in episodes in October and November. So, if you would like to be a co-host on Crazy Comics and Stories in the month of December, you can! Believe it or not, kids, I am letting other people co-host. If you have a topic, go ahead and let me know. If you have experience with other podcasts, go ahead and let me know. But you can be a co-host. How, you may ask, and you darn well should. You can email me at solitarerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject co-host. If you don't have an idea for a episode topic, that's okay. Joe usually doesn't have an idea anyway. I have tons of ideas. And if I know a little about you and what you like to collect, we can do a focused episode like I did with Dangerous Dan Moore when we talked about his favorite character, Thanos. Or when I co-hosted with Adam Vermillion and we talked about his favorite character, Daredevil. So go ahead and email me. I'm looking for co-hosts and I'd like you to be one of them.
And if you think that I'm just not doing enough, well, guess what, kids? I'm doing all these other podcasts, too.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts for you. There's, of course, Crazy Comics and Stories, where myself and Crazy Joe Ryder get together once a week to talk comics. We review comics, we talk about upcoming comics, we talk about comics history. Anything that has to do with comics, we're going to talk about. We also have Series in Review, where we review series and kind of give a DVD commentary of past comics that we've enjoyed. There is also Solitaire Rose Radio. Solitaire Rose Radio is my solo show where I discuss upcoming comics, past comics, comics history, and interview comics creators. These are all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. There's also the podcast I'm proudest of. That's Novelcast, where I take the novels that I have written and turn them into audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. Over at Bad Advice, myself, Dan Moore, and Wolfie B. Bad take your questions and give you bad advice. It's at badadvice.solitairerose.com. Now, don't think that I'm doing all the podcasts, because there's also Scrabbling Across the West by Dave Coffell and Stephanie Coffell. Dave is a musician and Stephanie is his wife. They travel the country performing music and playing Scrabble over at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. And finally, the newest member of the Solitaire Rose Radio group, that's Fantastic Forecast, where myself and host of For the Love of Comics, Adam Vermillion, go over the series The Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's available at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. If you would like to advertise on any of these podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks.
And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he invents a new character called Swiss Army Knife Man. It's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
I'm sorry. I'm bidding on this guy's amalgam lot. There's a lot of other stuff in there, too. So who knows if I get it. Whatever. I'm trying to get rid of my comics. Let's buy more. Not a lot's been going on. I've been lowering prices on a few things, adding some stuff. It's only been 3 days since the last podcast for you people peeking behind the veil. But the only thing of note, I sold my daughter's Coraline softcover, which was Neil Gaiman. I'm trying to think. It was a movie, but was it a... It was a novel, it was a book.
Stop motion animation and a book.
Yeah. A book first and then a movie. And I think, did they make a comic series out of it? What's kind of funny is my wife and I have been watching the Lucifer show, the one that was on Fox that picked up on Netflix. And one of the scenes where the detective is reading to her daughter, she's reading Coraline to her daughter, which I thought was kind of funny. You know, and then again, because that version of, well, not the TV version, but the whole Lucifer thing came out of Sandman. So it's all about Neil. If it's not Neil, it's Alan Moore. Yeah, I don't have a lot to talk about. I've been putting things on the eBays, and of course, if you go on there and you want to see what's new, just go to the Facebook page, and actually, I just posted something on ours, Crazy Comics and Stuff, and just put things up newly listed, and you'll get a good shot to see what it is. I just put on a whole bunch of Warrior Nun books from 1996 that were signed. You remember the First Kingdom, don't you, Corey? Jack Kaz's...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I had a run of that. Not a complete run, but I put that up fairly cheap. A bunch of Internal Correspondence, which was the magazine from Cap City that talks about what was going on that month. So if you're a history guy or you just want to look for a unique cover, like a Star Trek or Uncle Scrooge or Cerebus cover, check that out. And who knows what else I'm going to put up. KRAYZ, let me know you're a rabid listener of this here podcast, and we'll go out and get you a rabies shot. But I'm prone to toss in something free or do something nice for you because we appreciate our listeners. So Crazy Comics and Stuff, come get some.
Well, and now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not pie. Where I met it. What? There's pie?
See, I told you I could distract Corey.
No, not where I light a candle that smells like sea breeze and meditate for an hour on Christina Hendricks' marvelous rack. No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, we talked about it back at one of the stores in town, two of the stores in town. Level Up Games is closing. Thanks to the ever-assholic algorithm of Facebook, I missed the 50% off closing of the Egan store. However, the South St. Paul one is still going. As we did this podcast, they've just bumped everything up to 40%, and they still got quite a bit in there, including a ton of omnibuses. There's a lot of them. I mean, there's some of them I'm not sure if I want, like the Daredevil Shadowlands, even at 40% off. But they have a lot of graphic novels, a lot of books. They tend to lean more towards the newer side of things. So my daughter's boyfriend and I went down late last night because they stay open till 8 p.m. every day, and they were at 30% off. I saw a couple things, but I didn't buy anything. He bought a couple things, I'm not going to say, because they were kind of gifts for her. And then, of course, today they're at 40% off. So I'm kind of freaking that. Well, I guess I'm not freaking because I didn't buy anything, but I'm freaking that they're going. I hate to see a comic shop take off. I don't know if you saw. Oh, hang on a second. The Cray 3000, the 4000. Come on, wake up. Star Trek Nog. The actor who played Nog on Deep Space Nine, Aaron Eisenberg, died at age of 50. And I was kind of sad to hear about that. Of course, if you were looking to buy that autographed Deep Space Nine comic he did, they've all disappeared. One left for $50. Nothing like death to bring out a collectible, is there? Anyways, the other thing I wanted to save because I'm kind of bumming out about, Corey, you've made it no big deal. Well, I said that wrong. It is a big deal that you suffer from anxiety, but you've been very open about it. And hopefully somebody who has it hears how you're dealing with it and how they can deal with it themselves. The last couple weeks, people who have been really close to me, I found out are suffering from depression. I don't even know what they call it. Clinical depression, whatever fancy medical name.
There are different kinds of depression. Clinical is one that is ongoing and kind of on a flat level. There's also dysthymia, which is depression added with despair, where you're so depressed you really don't think things can ever get better. Depression, there are as many words for depression as the Eskimos have for snow, is the best way to think of it. So when someone says they have depression, it could be everything from what I have, which is anxiety, and when I get incredibly anxious, it manifests as depression, to people who are so depressed that they don't get out of bed, they don't do their dishes, they don't take care of themselves. So I just wanted to do a little clarification there.
And it helps because I don't know anything about it, but I do know the people that I care about are being treated for it. But it was just kind of a downer to hear about. I mean, and it's just, if you are suffering from that, go take care of yourself. That's about the only kudos I can give the people, that they did recognize there was something wrong and they did get in and they are being treated for it. So it got me freaking a little.
Corey, can I jump in a little on that?
Please do.
I actually posted something about this on Facebook a while back. When you hear someone has depression or anxiety or some sort of mental illness, the one thing that you always ask that person is there anything I can do to help? And speaking as someone with anxiety, great. Now you've just given me a job for you. You may think that you're offering yourself up, and you are, but it's better just to say, I understand. Just be with that person. Just check in with them. Sometimes you just want someone to sit with you. Sometimes you just want understanding. One of the things that manifests with my anxiety is if people invite me to stuff, I'll say yes. But then as it gets closer and closer to the date, I start to imagine all of the ways in which it could go wrong. And I will say that I'm sick, or I'll say that I'm busy, or I'll take a shift at work, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to avoid that rather than deal with it head on. So one of my friends now has that same thing. And she's constantly asking, you know, we should do something together. You know, we never see each other except at work, et cetera, et cetera. So every so often I'll say, hey, I'm doing this. If you want, you can come along. And she'll say yes, and then like the day before or a few hours before, she'll go, I think I'm going to tap out. And I always say the same thing. You don't need to give an excuse. I understand. It's okay. You're still my friend. Call me if you change your mind. I'll invite you to the next thing I do. Give that understanding rather than make any sort of judgment, because what people need most in these situations is just to know that someone's there for them. The one thing that I always point out is when my anxiety gets really high because of the things that have happened to me in my past, I think, oh, people only put up with me because they have to. Or I have done something terrible. And I'll go over the last conversation I have with them in minute detail to try and figure out what I did that screwed things up. And once I figured that's what I do out, I've told my friends, look, if I contact you and say, are we good? I say that because I'm dealing with anxiety and it's making me think nobody likes me anymore. So I'm just saying, are we good? If there's a problem, we have to let me know so that I'll quit obsessing on it. We can fix it. If there's no problem and it's all in my head, just say, yeah, we're good. Talk to the people who have these things and ask what works for them rather than kind of bringing yourself to it, because someone with a mental illness does not see the world the same way you do. Someone with anxiety, if someone says, I need to talk to you about something later, you know, for most people, it's like, you know, they'll kind of blow it off. For someone with anxiety, their mind is going to go right to the worst possible thing that happens, and it's going to stay there. So I don't know if that advice makes a lot of sense, but I hope that it gives like some guideposts in how to deal with this sort of thing. Joe?
Excellent. Thank you. That's pretty much my freaking. What do you got that you're freaking on, Mr. S?
About almost a year ago, I interviewed Bill Shelley, who's one of the original fanzine creators back in the 60s. He then left comics fandom altogether. And when he came back and started writing books. He's written wonderful books on Harvey Kurtzman, on James Warren, And I interviewed him about his book, Sense of Wonder, which was his memoir. It wasn't an autobiography, it was a memoir. And the difference is that a memoir is just kind of bits and pieces of your life, not the whole thing. And I'd always heard about him because, you know, I was involved in comics history. And he was one of those guys, oh, he's one of the originals. And he worked on Alter Ego doing these, basically doing articles about almost forgotten comic creators. And when I interviewed him, he was charming. He was funny. We talked for at least a couple hours after I stopped recording. And we traded emails back and forth, and we were going to set up an interview for his James Warren book, but he got too busy because he had these other projects he needed to get done. And now I know why he got too busy, because he passed away of cancer a couple of weeks ago. He didn't tell anyone he had it until the very end. And if you've been on Facebook and know people who knew him or follow my Facebook, we've talked about how it's such a great loss, because he was never a comic creator. He was someone who loved comic creators, and his creativity went that way. One of the things that we talk about on the show is comic history, and Joe says it, and other people say it's, oh, Corey, you know all this stuff. And I always say that I stand on the shoulders of giants. The stuff that I know is stuff that I've read from people like Bill Shelley and Joel Thingball and Roy Thomas and Michael T. Gilbert. And he was one of the giants. And it's, I wish I would have known him sooner. On a lighter note, my local Walmart blows chunks. It sucks rubber donkey cock. All over the internet, I am seeing people showing pictures of the new DC setup at the Walmart books for their Walmart books, and they've got all eight of the new number ones and the Superman number 15 and the local Kmart, local Walmart. Nope, they have all the ones from last month. So I went there after my shift Friday night because I just need to pick up Superman number 15. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll pick up the Batman number one and maybe one or two others. Kind of, you know, the Batman number one, just put that aside for investment and stuff. Nope, all they have is the old ones. And so I had to drive all the way to the Walmart and they didn't have it. So now I have to go to another goddamn Walmart. And the last thing I'm geeking on, Joe, remember that Jonah Hex omnibus?
Yes.
Did you know I ordered it?
I think you did, yeah.
And then you pay for it in advance.
Oh, we do, yeah, because we get a good discount.
Yeah, it's not coming out now.
Of course not.
So, Joe, what you geeking on?
Let's see. As this podcast drops, we are 1 week away from Fall Comic Con, the one-day wonder. October 5th, 2019, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., 33,000 square feet of comic book mayhem in the Minnesota State Fair Edumacation Building.
Because you need to get edumacated.
All the details, and I do mean all of them, are on mcbacomiccons.com, on their Facebook page. Tons of creators, tons of dealers, free grab bag for the first 300 people. My spies say that they may not be doing the grab bags anymore. So this may be your last chance. Yeah, they're just for what people are getting, that they think they want to maybe put their efforts to something more fun than that. Although the grab bags are pretty fun. It's I don't know what else to say. My buddy Pat and I will be sitting at the front door probably the first couple hours. Last time I was barely able to walk, so I sat there for like the first 3-4 hours. And so if you recognize us, say hi, stop, drop off some pie for Mr. Strode. I think you're working that day or whatever. If you got something for the charity booth, we don't do it at the Fall Con, but we will accept things, and then I can get you a text thing later. So I'm looking forward to that. My wife and I I actually had a rare Tuesday night off. When my new bid starts, I'm off now Sunday, Monday, Tuesday instead of the weekend with Monday. So we're back to Tuesdays and going to see $5 movies. Well, we went a couple Tuesdays ago and we saw Angel Has Fallen. It was a $5 movie. It was about $4.99. Too expensive for what we paid. It's in a typical, you know, the lone fighter is accused and he has to single-handedly fight his way and clear him. You know, for $5, it was halfway through it, I'm you know, you're rubbing your brain going, oh, this is just not working. Okay, you got to think like you're on a roller coaster. You don't look for life-changing moments on a roller coaster. Unless, of course, the thing breaks or something. But so I just said, you know, I'm going to sit back. I'm just going to enjoy the movie. It was what it was, and it, you know, I saw it, and I probably never have to worry about it again. But we go to the Marcus Theater out in Oakdale, which is fun because you can buy anything you want. You can get drinks, including hard liquor if you're so inclined. You can get pizza, hamburgers. We just kept it cheap because we went out to eat ahead of time. I mentioned earlier about the Jason show. It had Kurt Angle on it, which was kind of fun. I'm getting excited to have SmackDown back on TV because I don't have cable, so I've been kind of out of the loop of watching wrestling. Heck, I don't even watch I didn't even watch WrestleMania this year. I mean, I read about it, but you know, who knows? We may start a second podcast, or maybe, okay, part one we talk wrestling, part two we talk comics, part three dad jokes. Okay, probably not.
That could be the return of Solo Joe.
No. I need someone to no sell it. It's, you know, I just can't do him without you, Corey. I'm sorry.
You just pretend I'm there.
No, it doesn't work. I gotta have you. Anyways, the other thing I did today was just kind of fun. Something I haven't done in a while. I just sat downstairs, sorted comics. You know, going through stuff. It's been probably about a year since I've done that. So, and, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going through it. There's Amazing Spider-Man 11, 12, 13, and 33. Okay, I got some holes here. And just as I find piles of them sitting in random spots around my pile of crap, or just find actually here's an actual short box that I actually alphabetized. So I'm just putting things together, getting the miniseries together that I've never read, getting together things that I'm like, you know, I am not keeping this. It's going on the amazing eBays. So that was just kind of fun, you know. And then as I'm doing it, you just start thinking of stuff and remembering just how exciting it was. When I was a kid, you're talking my golden age of comics, I fit my entire comic collection in two beer boxes. If you remember what beer boxes came in bottles, you could actually get the box. You still see them at liquor stores these days. Take the middle out. I wrapped them up in baggies, and I had them set according to title and issue number. And every so often, I'd take them out. I'd lay them all out, make sure they were all in shape. I'd maybe read one or two, add the current ones I have. Nowadays, it's a major league project because so many titles. Even as I was going through Doctor Strange, I'm like, why do I have 218s? Oh, that's right, Mark Waid's run, and then the previous run and whatever. So, and then sometimes it throws you off because I was like, okay, I have four Doctor Strange number fours. Oh, this is Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supremes. I remember that series. No, I don't. I have to recall if I want, you know, to read it. And sometimes there's ones like, I'm trying to think of the one from Heavy Metal that the bird lady at the end of the Heavy Metal movie. I can't remember her name. Tanrada, whatever. You know, the issues came out so far apart that I figure I got issue 1, 3, and 4. I know I've got issue 2. I've just got to find it. So I'll put it together. Finally get to read it. So who knows, maybe in the next couple geekings in the next couple weeks, we'll talk about, you know, series that have passed that I finally assembled and got to read. Who knows? Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you excited?
there is a new Professor Elemental CD. This one is Professor Elemental and His Amazing Friends with a knockoff of Kingdom Come. The first one was a knockoff of Secret Wars number one. This one is Kingdom Come number one. I have only heard one song from it. I have ordered it, but there is one song. So go to the YouTubes, look up Professor Elemental, I Am an Otter. And it's a lot of fun. I love his stuff. It's with steampunk flavored hip hop. Although he's moving more and more into doing modern stuff and not doing the story based Professor Elemental stuff. And I just really enjoy it. Comic wise, I got caught up on Archie. I read Archie 707. This is the third part of the Archie Sabrina story. And this shows how Archie and Sabrina met during the summer that Betty and Veronica were gone. And I like the fact that Sabrina at first wasn't 100% interested in him because he was obsessed with Betty and Veronica. I thought that was a wonderful thing to throw in the story. And having Archie actually kind of confronting the fact that he constantly talks about them all the time. Battle Pug number one by Mike Norton. Battle Pug is a fantasy series where the warriors ride giant pugs.
Pugs!
And it's so much fun. The webcomic ended a while ago. Image collected it all, and now Mike Norton is doing a new series. Just way too much fun. Way too much fun. And it's not humor in that it's joke after joke after joke. It's he sets up a humorous situation and then just treats it like a regular story. Superman of Smallville is one of the new kind of graphic novels for young adults. This one is by Art Franco and Balthazar, who did Tiny Titans and tons of other books. So this is another one in that style. It is Superboy, but he's not calling himself Superboy. He's Superman. But it's just a really charming, fun superhero story. The early days of Superman, drawn in that same style. I just love their work. They do stories for kids that aren't, you know, so saccharine that you feel sick. If I had a kid under the age of 12, this would be in their hands right now. And then the last comic that, well, I also read Something is Killing the Children, which Joe recommended and has gone in friggin' sane for back issues, even though there's only one issue out. What, I think they're on the fifth printing or sixth printing?
Wow. You heard it here first.
And each printing is selling out before it gets to stores. And the Flip Sebek, the guy in charge of Boom, actually put out a long Facebook post about the economics of why this is happening. You know, the reason they will do another printing is because Diamond will come to them and say, we have this many orders for this book. So they go, oh, we'll go back to press and we'll do that many orders of the book, plus maybe 10 to 20%. And by the time they get the books from the printer, they've gotten more orders than the 10 and 20% overage. So they have to go and do another printing. They physically cannot keep up with the orders for this book. It is a monster book. I don't want to tell you anything about it, other than it's really good. I was just surprised on every page. Really, really loved the book. And then the last comic I want to recommend is a mini-series. You probably should want to buy it as a trade paperback, but I picked up the first issue, and that is Star Trek Discovery Aftermath. Now, Joe, you have not seen the Star Trek Discovery.
No.
But there is a huge twist at the end of Season 2. Like a big game-changing twist. And this tells the story of the people who were not involved in the twist. This is a book about the Klingon Empire and Captain Pike's Enterprise. And as I've said, as I said when the series was on, I could watch a series about Captain Pike's Enterprise all day and twice on Sunday. I love the actors. I love the idea. I love the fact that how well they handled everyone involved. And the fact that they're doing this comic focusing on Captain Pike just makes me happy. We got this. We got the Picard book. We got all sorts of Star Trek coming soon. They're firing up the novels again. I'm not real happy about the fact that the novels are now trade paperbacks that are $16 each. And you can still read them in about 3 hours. But still, you know, we're getting a lot of good Star Trek stuff. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Cool.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
The other day, I was walking down the street, and I happened to come upon two young boys playing on the sidewalk. I listened to them for a long while. They didn't say anything funny, so I kept walking. Then yesterday afternoon, I was out walking, and I saw two little boys bragging to each other on the sidewalk. The first boy said, "You know the Panama Canal? Well, my dad dug a hole for it." And the second boy said, "That's nothing. You know the Dead Sea? Well, my father killed it." Hit my music.
Done, bitches!